You want to be a good neighbor, and you're pretty sure that means loving your neighbor. But how? The first step to loving your neighbor is to know your neighbor. A quick demographic search yields graphs and charts and data that quickly become overwhelming. But behind every statistic, every bar graph, every number, there are very real people whose lives are full of needs, longings, and dreams. This four-week series will explore how we can live out our values of being curious, creative, and compassionate when we ask, "Who is my neighbor?"
Our mission as a church is to ignite authentic life in Christ. And when we talk about the way that we go about that, we usually talk about being curious, creative, and compassionate. Those are our three core values. But today, we're going to mix it up just a little bit. We're going to accomplish our mission of igniting authentic life in Christ and fanning it into an all-consuming flame by being curious and then compassionate and then creative. We're going to take a walk through my neighborhood. So come on with me. Let's go. So usually when we talk about being curious, we mean that we're curious about, well, what does the Bible say about something? We're curious about what other people say about something, especially people that disagree with us. And we talk about being curious in prayer, sort of asking, well, what does God want of this? And today we're going to mean something very different. We're going to be curious about who our neighbor is and curious about how we can invite our neighbor into the mission of Sycamore Creek. Now, when we talk about being compassionate, usually we mean, well, whoever you are, or wherever you've been, or whatever you've done, and wherever we meet you, we're going to do our best to show you God's compassion, to be compassionate in God's grace to you. Now, there's three practices of compassion that we usually talk about here. One is being fiercely focused on the guest. Who's the new person here? Another is developing diverse friendships. It's hard to be compassionate to people who are different than us if we don't have diverse friendships. But a third practice of compassion is giving compassionate service and working for compassionate justice. Now, that's what we usually mean when we talk about being compassionate. But today, what we're going to mean is being compassionate to our neighbor's needs. What does our neighbor need, and how do we even know that? Most of us are familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that people have more needs than just food and clothes, and churches excel at meeting those needs. But there are more needs than just the base needs. There are higher level needs, and churches tend to struggle at meeting those needs. So what we want to do today in being compassionate is learning our neighbor's needs, not just the basic ones, but the higher level ones too. The third core value, we've been curious, we've been compassionate, and today we're being creative. What we usually mean when we say we're creative is that we're creative in the ways that we go about our mission. We don't get stuck in old ruts. We improvise, play jazz on old traditions. We try new things. We're willing to experiment and fail and get it done. There are three practices of creativity that we usually engage in. The first is we are creative in ministry and mission. The second is we are creative in outreach. And the third is that we are creative in the use of our buildings. But what we mean by creative today is we are creative in the way that we meet our neighbor's needs. And we are creative in inviting them into our mission. We like to take some time in our messages to give you a chance to talk about it or reflect either with your neighbor or with, the online community in the comments. So here's a question for you to chat about. Here it is. How have you seen us already living out these three core values? Curious, compassionate, and creative. If you haven't caught it yet, we're starting a new series today called Who's My Neighbor? It's about our neighbors, and we're really kind of digging deep into our mission and our values and how we take being curious, compassionate, and creative to meeting our neighbors' needs. Today, we're sort of doing a flyover, an overview of the whole thing. And then in the next 2 weeks, we're going to look at two different demographic groups, two different neighbor groups that are common to all three of our campuses. And then on week four, we're going to take a look at some very unique demographic groups that are at one campus, but not necessarily at the others. Now, there are three key verses that are in the background of this whole series that kind of inform our posture in terms of our mission in knowing our neighbors. And here's the first one. Jesus is asked, what's the greatest commandment? And he says, well, listen, there's two of them. The first is love God with everything you got. And the second is love your neighbor as yourself, your neighbor. Now, he's asked this by a lawyer who then wants to know, well, who is my neighbor? And Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan. And then you all know that story. There's a guy in a ditch and two religious leaders, they walk by him. And then a Samaritan, the hated racial or ethnic group of the day, stops and helps this guy, pays for his bills to care for him and everything, so on and so forth. And then Jesus asks the guy which one was his neighbor. And the religious lawyer says, well, the one who showed him mercy. And Jesus says, well, go and do the same thing, show them mercy. And that's what we're trying to do in this series. We're trying to show mercy to our neighbors by being curious, compassionate, and creative about them, especially if they're different than who we are. A second key verse comes from the book of Jeremiah. And this is a moment when the ancient Israelite nation they're in exile in Babylon. And God speaks to them through the prophet Jeremiah and says this, work for the peace and prosperity of the city where I sent you into exile. Pray to the Lord for its welfare will determine your welfare. God is basically telling the Israelites, listen, help your neighbors prosper, even these foreign neighbors who are your enemies, because in their prosperity, you will prosper as well. So in this series, we're really just asking the question, how do we help our neighbors thrive? How are we curious, compassionate, and creative to help everyone thrive in our neighborhoods? A third and final verse is the story of Acts. Acts is the very early history of the church. And Paul, one of the first missionaries of the church, is giving kind of a speech to a group of people. And he says this, for David, after he had served the purpose of God in his own generation, died and was laid beside his ancestors. Now, the New Testament author saw David as one of the sort of key kings in ancient Israel. And Paul is basically reflecting on how, well, David had a particular purpose for his generation. And I think that's true of us today as well. We have a particular purpose in all of the different generations. We're going to get deeper into those generations in a little bit. There's one other core assumption that underlies this whole series. And that core assumption is going to be a little hard, especially for churches to grasp hold of. And I think maybe not so much Sycamore Creek, but churches in general really struggle with this. And here's the core assumption. We cannot reach everyone. We can't reach everyone. To attempt to reach everyone is to reach no one. You can't be creative in every single direction. You have to pick some particular directions you're creative with. You can't be compassionate to every single need. What are the specific needs that God is calling you to be compassionate to? You can't be curious in every single direction. There's some specific people that perhaps God has put a burning passion in your pulse, a burning in your heart, in our hearts as a church to reach. And in that respect, we can be curious and compassionate and creative in a unique niche, in a unique space. Who is the niche? Who are the niche neighbors that we are called to reach as a church? Now, some of the good news of this is that there's lots of churches, and if every church focused on who they were called and uniquely gifted to reach, then we would reach everybody. We have to depend on and trust in other churches in the area to do their work, to play their part in the body of Christ. Let me give you just an example of that. There are many LGBTQIA affirming churches in Lansing. Every single one of them that I am aware of is liturgical and formal in its worship style. To my knowledge, we are the only gay-affirming church that is modern or contemporary, both in its sort of culture and posture. If you are looking for a gay affirming church and one that is contemporary, we're pretty much it. It's not to say there's anything wrong with liturgical or formal, but there are lots of other churches in the area, good ones, that are doing that sort of thing. We don't have to be everything to every single person. So what we're going to dive into today is demographics. And you may think, I've heard that word, but I'm not sure what it is. So let's give you a definition of demographics. Demographics are statistics that describe populations and their characteristics. Now, when it comes to demographics, there are some basic demographics, and let me give you just a list of some of those. These aren't all of them, but these are some of the basic demographics. Population, race, age, income, education, and generations. Now, when we get into this sort of demographic work, it's going to feel like drinking from a fire hose.
You get to drink from the fire hose! Okay, you ready?
Yeah!
Open wide!
Whenever you talk about statistics or data, you may have that feeling. And in the midst of that feeling, I want you to think about one big question. One big question, and here it is. How are we curious, compassionate, and creative with our neighbor's needs? How are we curious, compassionate, and creative with our neighbor's needs? Now, here on this video version of the message today, I'm going to be talking about our Eastwood campus and a 10-minute drive around the Eastwood campus. But live and in person, each of our campus pastors is going to make this really specific to their campus, a 10-minute drive around their campus. But when you jump up to 10,000 feet, the basic demographics aren't much different between all three campuses. So let's dive in. Let's drink from the fire hose. When it comes to population as a whole, the Lansing area, or our area, 10-minute drive around Eastwood, is going to grow in the next 10-ish years. It's going to grow to 104,649. That is a 6.3% growth. With each demographic data point, I am going to ask a basic question about whether we are meeting the needs of our community. So when it comes to population growth, you can ask the question, if the region is growing over the next 10 years, is our church growing? Is your campus growing? Now, church growth experts say, of course, that under 0% growth is decline, and 0 to 5% tends to be sort of considered plateau, and it's over 5% that is growth. So if the area around your church, your campus, is growing, but you're not growing, then something's not quite right. Now, here's the racial makeup over the next several years, and you'll see that the white population is decreasing while most other non-white populations are increasing. So here's the specific question about your campus, about our campus. Does your campus look like your neighborhood? Does it look like your neighborhood racially and ethnically? What would it take to look like your neighborhood, like your neighbors? All right, let's talk about age. The average age is going to increase in our neighborhood from 34 to 36. The state average is 42. So when you look around at your campus, at our campus, what's the average age of the person who's around here? And what would it take to be more representative of our neighbors age-wise? The average household income in our neighborhood is going to grow. It's going to grow by almost 13% to about $77,000. Now, what's interesting is when you compare that to the state average is going to grow by about 14%, just a little bit more. But notice the big difference between the state average and the average in our neighborhood. It's about a $23,000 deficit in our neighborhood. What does that say about how we accomplish our mission and that difference compared to the state average? Now, one way that I think about this is, well, there's this sort of Christian tradition of giving 10% of what you make away, and 10% of $77,000 is $7,700. So in theory, there should be plenty of resources in our neighborhood to accomplish our mission. Here's another data point. The average education level Now, you can probably guess this, the average education level in our neighborhood is higher than the state average. When I think about this data point, I ask myself this question: what does it mean to be in ministry to people's minds, to their intellect? What does it mean to help them worship God with their mind? We've got a very highly educated group of people around here, group of neighbors. How can we connect with their mind? Or how do we speak to the intellect of our neighbors? It's going to be a very important part of our mission here at Sycamore Creek. Here's one last data point from this fire hose that y'all have been drinking from, and that is generations. Gen Z, those born between 1997 and 2012, currently make up 23% of the population, but by 2033, they will make up 44%. Millennials, that is the group born between 1981 and 1996, currently make up 42% of the population, but by 2033, they will make up 28% of the population. Did you catch that? That's an entire flip-flop between millennials and Gen Z. Gen Z are soon to be the largest population group in our area. So I don't know about you, but I'm curious, who are Gen Z people? What do they like? What needs do they have? How can we creatively meet or connect with those needs? And then how are they different than, well, millennials or Gen X, my generation, or boomers, my parents' generation, or the silent generation, my grandparents' generation? Meeting those needs is going to be different. All right, you've had your first taste from the fire hose. Are you feeling it? Are you feeling it? Remember that one big question, the one big question through all of this. How are we curious, compassionate, and creative with our neighbors' needs? Now, we've looked at some basic demographics, but here's a question for you right now. Here's the question. Put it in the chat or turn to a neighbor and answer it. How do you see similarities or differences between Sycamore Creek and our neighbors in terms of population, race, age, income, education, and generations? Or what one stat jumped out at you? Let's talk about that. All right, does it feel like you're drinking from a fire hose? I hope that eventually in this message, it'll become to feel less like a fire hose and more like a fountain that you can play in, that you can jump in, that you can enjoy like your kid down at a splash pad. Remember that one big question: how can we be curious, compassionate, and creative to our neighbor's needs to accomplish the mission of our church? All right, this is where it gets really interesting to me. We're going to talk not just about demographics, but psychographics. Psychographics? What is psychographics? I was just already feeling like you were making me drink from a fire hose. Now you're talking about some psych whatever. Let me give you a definition of psychographics. Psychographics are lifestyle, opinions, attitudes, interests, and personality traits. Do you need to hear that again? Psychographics, it's a big word. All right, here it is again. Psychographics are lifestyle, opinions, attitudes, interests, and personality traits. So we're gonna talk about psychographics. We're also gonna talk about beliefs. And again, this is where I think it gets really interesting. You might ask yourself, how in the world, Tom, do we know about people's lifestyles, opinions, attitudes, and beliefs? And this is both really cool and really scary all at the same time. You probably are familiar with credit rating agencies like Experian. Well, they track every single purchase, every single bill that you pay. And these professional demographers at Experian have separated the United States into 72 distinct subgroups, 72 neighborhoods here in the United States. And they've numbered them 1 to 72. Then they've categorized those 72 into family groups called mosaics, and they've given them a letter, A through S. So it goes kind of like this: A1, A2, A3, B4, B5, B6, so on and so forth. Now, those who are in the A family group tend to be the highest socioeconomically in our culture. Those who are in the S family group tend to be the lowest socioeconomically. There's a Canadian demographer, theologian, author, pastor. His name is Tom Bandy, who has taken this 72 groups that Experian has identified and has turned them into, well, sort of religious profiles that churches can tap into, can reflect on what do each of these 72 groups, who are they uniquely when it comes to their sort of spiritual or religious perspectives, and what are their particular needs in this life? All right, next week, we are going to dive deep into one of these family groups that is the biggest group in all of our campuses. It's called the O family group, the singles and starters. And are you feeling like we're drinking from a fire hose again? There's a lot of fire hoses, fire hydrants, at least in our neighborhoods. They help save us, all right? So I hope you're playing in the fountain right now. We're playing in the fountain of water of all of this information. All right, the O family group, O51 to O55, are called singles and starters. And they are the largest by far group in our whole region. This is probably no surprise given that MSU is right nearby. But it's not just college students, it's college graduates as well. They make up a little over 30% of our area. That's all the way down into Potterville, South Lansing, and at our Eastwood campus. That's a total of about 30,000 people. There are 30,000 singles and starters in our area. Tom Bandy describes their religious perspective as this: they are looking for heroes of the faith. Looking for heroes of the faith. All right, that's week two. Week three, we're gonna look at a specific lifestyle segment. They're called L42, or Rooted Flower Power. I love that name, Rooted Flower Power. They make up almost 5% of our region. That's a total of a little over 4,600 people. Tom Bandy describes their religious preference like this: always take time to smell the roses and appreciate what you have. This group is significant at all of our campuses and in all of our neighborhoods. Now, each of our campuses has some very unique neighbors as well. At our Eastwood campus, there's a group that I have never seen before in any of the demographic profiles of any of our other campuses. I am so excited about this group. They are called G24, and they are ambitious singles. They make up about 2% of the area, or about 2,100 people in our neighborhoods. Tom Bandy describes their religious preference like this: spiritual truth is buried beneath an avalanche of religious hypocrisy. Those are my people right there. Those are our people at Eastwood. Those are the people who we are reaching. And in week four, we're gonna dive deep into those. But we're gonna look at some specifics of other campuses as well. For example, at our South Lansing campus, there's a group called M45. They're families in motion who are growing and expanding. They make up about 2.5% of the population of our neighborhoods. That's a little over 11,000 neighbors. Now, their religious perspective, according to Tom Bandy, is God, family, and country. At our Potterville campus, and actually, this is representative of the entire region outside of the immediate metropolitan area of Lansing, is a group called I-30, which is potlucks and great outdoors. They make up just a little over 3% of the population in our neighborhoods, or just about 14,000 people. Tom Bandy says that their religious perspective is that religious practices cherish our past and can empower my future. All right, that was a lot of information. So do you feel like you're drinking from a fire hose? I hope you feel like you're playing in a splash pad right now. Remember that one big question: how are we curious, compassionate, and creative with our neighbors? Okay, those are the psychographics. Remember, that's attitudes, opinions, lifestyles. And now we're gonna take a dive into beliefs. Every 4 years, there's a major belief survey across the entire United States. And let's take a look and let's ask the question, well, what do our neighbors believe? What do they believe about God? What do they believe about Jesus? What do they believe about, well, all kinds of things. And I wanna highlight just a couple of them. The top three agreements about God, that is to say, many people believe these things,
is that God is love and invites the world into a loving relationship. I have a relationship with one living God, and I believe God created a literal heaven and hell. Now, I think it's interesting to also look at the bottom three agreements. That is, like, people disagree with these statements. So here's the bottom three beliefs about God. I believe God created the world but takes no further part in it. I believe there are many gods, and I don't believe a God exists. The material universe is all that is. I would say that in general, our neighbors in the area or the region have a pretty historically orthodox belief system when it comes to who God is. All right, let's take a look at another set of beliefs and beliefs about Jesus. Here's the top three agreements about Jesus. That is, many people believe these things. People in the church do not behave as Jesus would behave. Belief in Jesus does not require participation in a church. Jesus was both divine and human. All right, let's take a look at the bottom three now. Jesus was a great prophet only. Jesus was a good and wise moral teacher, but no more. Jesus lived a perfect, sinless life while on earth. Now, not everything in this set of beliefs about Jesus is historically orthodox, but it's mostly such. But I would say the thing that really sticks out to me is how irrelevant the church is to people's beliefs about Jesus. All right, let's take a look at one more set of beliefs. That is the social and moral beliefs. Here's the top three. This is, many people believe these things. I believe strong families are key to social stability. I believe America has a moral responsibility to be a force for good in the world. And I believe tolerance is necessary for social peace and well-being. After these top three beliefs or agreements about social and moral values, you might think that all of our neighbors are super conservative. But let's look at the bottom three agreements. These are things that people mostly disagree with. I believe race relations in the United States are generally good. I believe abortion should become illegal. I believe religious communities should be exempt from LGBTQ-based policies or regulations. I would describe this as a pretty mixed conservative and progressive view of social or moral issues when it comes to looking at what our neighbors believe about them. How about the top religious preferences? Well, the top are Catholics, about 25%, about a quarter of our population would consider themselves preferential to being Catholic. The second biggest group's really fascinating, though. It's the nuns. Now, that's not N-U-N, it's N-O-N-E. And about a quarter of the population don't really jive with any religious tradition. Methodists, which we're part of that tradition, United Methodists, well, we're the sixth. We make up almost 6% of the population. I think it's also interesting to look at that non-denominational preference. The non-denominational preference is pretty big in there as well, about 9.5%. And we reach a lot of people who have that kind of preference, but, well, who are more affirming of gay people. Now, one thing that's really interesting to me is that that group of nuns is actually shrinking. It shrunk from 28% down to 21%. I'd like to say that that shrinking population is because they've all decided Sycamore Creek is the place for them to go. Now, when you look at participation rates, this is also really interesting. A little under 60% want to participate weekly, 22% 2 to 3 times a month, 7.4% once a month, and then you can see less than monthly is about 8%, and just on the holidays is a little over 4%. So to have a weekly regular attendance of, say, 100 people, you're going to need more than 100 people who are in your group. You're going to need maybe 200 to 300 who are in your orbit. To connect with people, we're going to have to connect with them, well, in more ways than just on Sunday morning. All right, I want to look at one other set of data points or beliefs, and this has to do with, like, ministry preferences and what kinds of things are going to reach people. The top religious program or ministry preferences is a warm and friendly encounter. Did you catch that? The top ministry preference is a warm and friendly encounter. People are so looking for community, a place where they can belong, that that is their most important thing. And that's more than whether I greet them as the pastor. That's whether you greet them. The second biggest religious program or ministry preference is quality sermons.
we spend a lot of time working on sermons and working on our whole worship experience and encounter. And, well, that makes me feel good because that's something that people, well, they highly prize that at churches. You'll see some of the other things are adult social activities, opportunities for volunteering in the community, holiday programs or activities, opportunities to develop personal relationships, traditional worship experiences, involvement in social causes, family-oriented activities, and small groups. We do a lot of these kinds of things all in what we call our small groups ministries. Now let's take a look at the bottom of this list. Out of 32, here's the ones that hit the bottom. Addiction support groups, parenting development, singles or college age groups, health or weight loss programs, or daycare or after school programs. All right, now here's something to understand. Just because it's not on this list or because it's at the bottom of the list doesn't mean that we wouldn't do it. It all has to do with who is God calling us to reach. If God was calling us to reach and meet the needs of single parents who needed after school program, well, then we'd do after school programs if we had the gifts and the talents and the resources to do it. All right, let's go back to remember why we're doing all of this. You know, because probably by now you feel exhausted from drinking from the fire hose.
The fire hose!
But I hope maybe through this whole, well, curiosity session that you feel a little more like you're playing in a splash pad of compassion and creativity for who our neighbor is and what their needs are. Remember these three key verses. Jesus said that the most important commandments were to love God and love your neighbor. The prophet Jeremiah said that the Israelites, the ancient Israelites, should seek the prosperity of the cities around them. And Paul said that David served his purpose in his generation. So how can we be curious about who our neighbor is? How can we be compassionate to learn our neighbor's needs? How can we creatively meet the needs of our neighbor so that we accomplish our mission to ignite authentic life in Christ and fan it into an all-consuming flame? Here's one final chat question. Based on what you've learned here and already know, how are we doing being curious, compassionate, and creative with our neighbors? And what is God's purpose for you or for us in this generation? If you'd like to download all of these demographic reports, we're going to put a QR code up on the screen where you can download them and you can get lost in the fire hose and play in the splash pad to your heart's desire and content. If you do that, I'd love to talk with you.